Measure Up Podcast, episode 32. Small wins grow the buy-in to performance measurement. G'day and welcome. I'm Stacey Barr, the Performance Measure Specialist of StaceyBarr.com and your host for the Measure Up podcast. I believe performance measurement is the foundation for an organisation to be truly excellent at what it exists to do. And my passion is to make it easy and fun for you to do performance measurement meaningfully and engagingly. In this episode of the Measure Up podcast, I interviewed a lovely lady named Bec Bark about how she's helping schools in countries South Australia to focus on priorities and to only measure what matters. It's a case study about the early stages of Bec's experience in using PUMP to guide better performance measurement. Bec's focus has been on small wins, using just one or two of the PUMP techniques as the opportunities arise. And she's been getting fantastic buy-in and engagement by taking this approach. Now, before we start, during the interview, Bec mentions two programs that she attended to learn PUMP, and I thought you might like to have the links for these programs if you want to read a bit more about them. The first one is the Performance Measure Blueprint online program, and it takes the form of both a live webinar-based training series and an online self-paced training program. The choice is yours. You can read about the Performance Measure Blueprint online program at performancemeasureblueprintonline.com. Now, the second program that Bec mentioned is the Performance Measure Blueprint Workshop. And this is a live face-to-face version of the training. It's a two-day training workshop that I run around the world each year. And you can read more about the Performance Measure Blueprint Workshop at performancemeasureblueprint.com. So those two links again for the online program, it's performancemeasureblueprintonline.com, and for the workshop it is simply performancemeasureblueprint.com. Okay, let's get to the interview now.
G'day, this is Stacey Barr, Performance Measure Specialist of StaceyBarr.com, a creator of PUMP. And I am with Bec Bark, who is a performance analysis and reporting consultant, or PARC for short, of the Education Department of South Australia. Now, Bec came along and attended our June 2011 Performance Measure Blueprint Workshop in Melbourne, and I'm speaking with Bec today just to find out what she's been up to since she learned PUMP and how it's been working for her. So, Bec, welcome. Do you want to add anything to my little brief introduction of you?
Yeah, hi Stacey. Thanks for that. I actually did an online course with you back in February, March, and it was as a result of trying to implement PUMP then after doing the online course that I felt I needed to get a bit of a deeper understanding, which is why I went to the two-day course in Melbourne, which was really valuable from my perspective. I've been working in schools, mainly in classrooms and middle management roles for about 25 years in country South Australia, and I've had a few acting leadership positions, so had a fairly wide and broad range of experience within the education field.
So what was the trigger that brought you to want to learn PUMP, to get a bit of a skills boost in the performance measurement area?
Yeah, I moved into a new role, which was relatively a new concept for our organisation, and that was the PARC role. And that's where I supported schools and preschools to look at their data and evidence and use it for their improvement planning. And it might seem a little strange to some people that education really took this on as a new aspect of our work, but there had been pockets of practice where people had used their evidence to inform their improvement plans, but the creation of the PARC position was a really concerted effort by DEX to place a greater emphasis on the use of data and linking it to improvement. I'd done some performance measurement work through my special education background, where I'd worked with children with disabilities and looking at how we would measure a particular skill or a particular aspect of knowledge and the growth of individual students. So I had some understanding of performance measurement, but when I came into this role about looking at the bigger picture and linking it to the whole school improvement, I really didn't feel confident because I had no real data or statistics background, and I just felt that I really needed to have more knowledge and I needed to have a process to follow. I thought, if I've got a process to follow, then I'll be okay. But I found it quite difficult to find some form of education that would give me that what I was seeking. And it took me about 6 months, and then I came across PUMP as an online course. I came across your website, and I thought, out of everything that I've tried to find, I couldn't do anything distance education through the universities. It all had to be face-to-face, which wasn't suitable for me based in a country region. And so I undertook the online course. When I did that, there was probably, I think, up to about 100 people on that online course. So it was quite difficult to get my specific questions answered, and I was sort of struggling a bit with it. I did try and implement the first couple of steps of PUMP after I did the online course, but then when I went and did the face-to-face course in Melbourne, and it was a much smaller group, and I could really, you know, have that one-on-one with you and talking with other people, and that just really helped me clarify what it was about the aspects of the performance measurement and what was it about the process that I could take and I could tweak to our educational setting, I guess.
Excellent. And I hear you about the number of people that, that join these courses. We're keeping them smaller now because it is so much more engaging when it's just a little group.
Yeah, yeah.
The area that you are that you were applying PUMP with, and I know it's not just one area, but tell us a little bit about where in DECS you are applying PUMP.
Yeah. The first time that I felt ready to give it a go was with our regional support services. I think part of that was because of my background in special education, and so I felt confident about talking to people about what results they wanted from their work there, but also because the manager of the regional support services in our region had actually approached me to work with their team to try and connect their work a little bit more closely to our regional improvement plan. Our regional support services in that are people who work with children with disabilities and challenging behaviours and attendance issues. So we have people like speech pathologists, guidance officers who are psychologists, disability coordinators, attendance officers. So we have quite a broad range of people who work with the children who have those sorts of special needs. And sometimes it's a little bit hard for them to connect their work to some of the big broad goals that we have as educators. So what we did was we looked at the goals and objectives of the improvement plan and actually got them to select one goal that they felt their work connected most closely to. After that, they then decided on two results they wanted from their work this year. And people in the support services team really did that quite well, particularly some of the people who had the very clinical sorts of backgrounds, like the speech pathologists, that the results they wanted, that they were really quite measurable. So we did our results mapping, which really helped them connect. Oh yeah, now we can actually see for the first time where our work fits into that bigger DECS plan. And then that was where I got stuck, because I thought, okay, I've had a go, we've connected our work, and I'm not quite sure where to go next. So that was then when I went and pursued the face-to-face course in Melbourne. So I had a positive first experience, even though we'd only got a couple of steps down the way.
Which is fine. And speaking of those steps, that's basically how we've planned to have the rest of this conversation together, Beck, is to go through each of the steps of the methodology and just talk about what experiences you've had in each of them. I might do a quick synopsis or a quick reminder for everybody of what those steps are, just so that as we start going into it, they've got a framework to link it to.
Great.
So you've talked about results mapping, which is actually step two in the blueprint. Mm. The very first step is about warming people up and engaging them and getting them focused on something, which you did. You got them to focus on how they impacted on one goal and got a couple of results worked out for that.
Yeah.
So getting them warmed up is step one. Getting them to think about the results that are most worth measuring for them is step two. Then designing the measures themselves is step three. Step four is what we call a measure gallery, which is really about engaging people beyond just the team that's doing the immediate work on the measures so that a broader group of stakeholders can have an input to the measures. Step five is defining the measures or specifying exactly how they're calculated and what data is required, etc. Step six is reporting the measures, laying them out in a visual way that people can look at them and see the trends. Step seven is making sure that when they look at the trends, they're interpreting them validly and are going to take action on them. And step eight is about that final reflection and integrating the pump techniques into planning and improvement and activities in the future. So, Beck, when with the various teams that you have implemented pump with, what are the ways that you've approached them to warm them up to want to even engage in doing this with you?
Yeah, well, that first example that I gave with the regional support services, as I said, their manager approached me about helping connect their work, and I took her through the visual aspect of the results mapping because I found that had a really big impact on me, so that was, I guess, the impetus in terms of getting people on board. I think because I'd had that background in special education as well, I think when I approached the support services team and said, look, you know, I think that this could be a way that that's going to help you connect your work, because it was a visual thing and because of my background in special ed, so we were talking a common language, I think that there was a fair bit of positive response, I guess, and an openness to seeing what was going to be presented and seeing if it was of use to them. And certainly the positive feedback that resulted from that was actually really beneficial. So it was, as I said, it was really positive from the people who could really connect their work in a clinical way to measuring their performance.
Excellent. And like you say, having that trust and rapport already established, that ability to really understand where they're coming from would have helped a long way.
Yeah.
So how then did the results mapping go? Tell us a bit about that results mapping experience, how you did it, what sort of things came up and how people responded to it.
Yeah. The results mapping worked quite well with the support services. The support services team only get together a couple of times a year though. One of the things I guess I didn't explain at the beginning was that I am in a country region, and our region is 800 kilometres from one end to the other. And so time and distance is partly a factor to do with whether the work that I was doing was going to continue or not. Yes, it was, but it was going to be, you know, long term. So that was an interesting aspect, because you know it's hard then to keep the impetus going when we have a meeting at the beginning of the year and we have a meeting at the end of the year, and there's not a lot of connection in between because people are so busy travelling around the region. But at least it was a start, so I figure that next year we can actually, we actually now know how we do the results mapping, and we can then take it then the next couple of steps further down the track with them. So just to give you an example though, the speech pathologists in our region connected to that, one of our goals is about what they call emergent literacy and intentional teaching to provide a basis for learning to read. And so the speech pathologist connected to some work they were doing around some phonological awareness with preschools. And so one of their results is that all preschool children in their final term of preschool, which would actually be term one, 2012, will have age-appropriate phonological awareness skills. So it's a really great result that they selected because it's really measurable. The measure that they were using was an assessment called the Screen of Phonological Awareness, and I think 19 out of the 22 preschools in our region are actually involved in that project. So we were going to be getting some really good baseline data from that result.
That is great. And it's not just a measurable result, but it's a very important result as well.
Oh, absolutely, definitely, yes, yeah. I did take the results mapping further with one of the schools that I was working with,
yeah.
And that's a country school that has reception to Year 12 students in it. And they have
Can
every.
Can you explain a little about what reception to Year 12 students?
Sure.
I'm not sure that everyone would know that.
Sure. Reception students in South Australia are students in their first year of school, so they've been through preschool or kindergarten, and then they come in around about the age 5 to 6, and they start reception. So that's their first experience of school. Year 12 is our final year of school in South Australia, so students at that age are around about the 18 year old level. A lot of our schools in country locations have only one school in the town, in the community, and so that, and they call them area schools, and they have children from the age of 5 through to the age of 18 in the school. In larger country towns we have separate primary schools and high schools, but in smaller, more remote country towns we generally have one school for the whole community.
Thanks for explaining that back.
No worries, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. They have, this particular school has some fairly high levels of characteristics, I guess, of disadvantage. One of the really advantageous things about this school, though, is that they have the most enthusiastic and positive staff that I've had the honour of working with. So this particular school underwent a review, and that's something that does happen around Australia as part of the national partnerships work the government's involved in. And there were certain recommendations that came out of the review to for the school to apply to improve their performance. So the school had really embraced this. They had had a 3-year improvement plan in the past and they wanted to update it for the next 3 years. So they actually asked me for some help with their targets. At this stage I'd actually done the course in Melbourne and I'd done the original results mapping with the other support services team. So I thought, yep, I'm ready to go the next few steps. So I suggested that we use the PUMP process, the performance measurement process, as part of their improvement planning. One of the assistant principals had heard of PUMP and had heard of yourself, Stacey, and had a fairly good notion of the whole aspect of performance measurement. And also this school I'd actually worked at a few years earlier for about 4 years. So again, I had some really positive working relationships with many of the staff. And I think that was a really big help because the first time that I took the leadership team through the notion of PUMP, I could see that there were a few people who were struggling with it, which was good because they were really honest and open with me. But I really liked the way that the assistant principal summed it up. He said, look, you know, we asked you to come to help us with something. You've come and presented us with something else. But you know what? We've taken a step sideways and we've actually got a broader view. So they were really open to looking at this new way of working. And then from that point, they've actually really run positively with this. And they've got some wonderful feedback from people within our central office team in Adelaide as to how they've approached this work, which I'm just so thrilled for them to be open to doing this new work. So
how did results mapping go with them? Have you got some examples of results that came from their map?
They, as I said, they're a very enthusiastic team of people. And so, of course, they wanted to improve everything. So when we actually looked at their improvement plan, they had 5 priorities. Within each of those priorities, there were about 4 or 5 goals. And with each aspect of that they had a plan for the junior school, the middle school, the senior school, and also for the Aboriginal education team within the school. And so once we actually did the results mapping and we laid it all together, we found we had something like 115 goals that the school wanted to achieve in 3 years. And then they were wondering why it was going to be a bit of a struggle to get there.
Oh, wow.
But because it hadn't been represented visually, this was the biggest factor, I think, with the results mapping, because it represents that improvement work visually. Because it had only been written down on these separate plans and they hadn't actually connected them together, they didn't realise how much improvement work they were trying to do in that time. And, you know, when you've got about 115 goals, it's just impossible to go really deep and thoroughly into that improvement work. So the results mapping, what I did was I collated all of the different plans and said, okay, so on this first priority, let's just have a look at this first priority of literacy. And that was where we had about 115 goals. And so we actually then used it to prune. Okay, so yes, they're all important, but what are the things that are most important? What are the commonalities between the junior school, the middle school and the senior school? How can you collectively bring some of those goals together and make them a school goal? And so that was a really helpful process to go through for that site. So they pruned them down really, really well to the point where they ended up with, about four goals for the school.
Yeah.
And from that, there were a number of different measures because, say, for example, with their improved literacy outcomes, they would use a different measurement in the junior primary than they would in the middle school or the senior school. So it was in the measures that we actually got the variation so that they could actually make sure that each area of their school was progressing as they hoped they would.
It's a good example, really, of how you can have one result that's in essence the same right across the board, but you need two or three measures to give you the kind of detail that you need to understand that result.
Absolutely. And the other really good thing, and this was the same thing that came out with the regional support services, was how does the work in the classroom influence that next layer of goals? And that's, again, the beauty of the results mapping, because for the first time, people could really see the impact of what they did in their classroom and how that influenced a school goal, which helped to then achieve a site priority. So just that visual connection was so strong and so important for people to make the connection with.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you started talking about they did start designing some measures for these results. So
yes,
do you want to tell us a bit about how that process of, and here you'd be using the pump measure design template to help them come up with those measures. Tell us how that went.
Well, what we did was I worked with the leadership team, and there was a few sort of fairly key people on that in that middle management level who really took this and ran with it. So what we did was we looked at basically brainstorming, okay, so what are we currently using? You know, we were clear about the result we wanted, so we wanted more students to be reading at age-appropriate levels. And we talked about, we went through the what does it look like, sound like, feel like type process, which was as part of the template, which is a sensory specific component of the template. And so we talked about that there would be less students in reading intervention programs. There would be more students who were independently reading appropriate level texts at all year levels. So again, there were some broad things that could go across the junior, middle and senior school. We then brainstormed some potential measures, which was really good, because it made, or rather, it allowed the site to really look at, well, Do we just want to get more students above the national minimum standard in our NAPLAN results, or do we actually want to make sure that we're progressing those students who are achieving quite well but could achieve even further at the and measure the top end of the NAPLAN results? So we went through and we found some potential measures, and then what we did was we actually looked at, okay, well, what's going to be the most suitable measure for the junior school? What's going to be the most suitable measure for the middle school, and what's going to be the most suitable measure for the senior school? And that's where we then found that we had several measures for the same result.
That's tremendous. Mm. Now, I want to just make a comment about something, because I know there'll be other pump users out there hearing you say that word brainstorming. Doesn't Stacey say don't brainstorm your measures? And it's not the same thing that you're talking.
No.
When you use the term brainstorming there, it's not the same as what I'm talking about, because you did it within the measure design process.
Yes.
You thought through the result. You focused on what the result looked, sounded and felt like when it was happening. And then the measures that you came up with were about finding evidence of that. You weren't brainstorming them out of the blue.
No, that's right. And I remember that when we did the course in Melbourne, when we were looking at finding those potential measures, like we looked at, well, what are we already measuring and what else can we be measuring? And,
yeah.
And I remember you saying, look, don't discount anything, because the technique about, well, what's going to be a really strong measure and what's a really feasible measure, that's actually going to sort out which of the measures are good and which are actually going to be ones to stick with. So one of the things we did was the school looked at an alternative reading assessment. So with the NAPLAN, the National Literacy and Numeracy tests that happen, they only happen every second year. So the school wanted to be able to measure progress every year, because, you know, 2 years is too late when you're sort of finding out that a kid doesn't have the reading skills that they really need. So they actually included an additional measure in terms of an alternative reading assessment as well. So it was brainstormed within that whole notion of, okay, if kids are reading at age appropriate levels, how will we know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was very specific with that, yeah.
Absolutely. What I really liked in what you'd said, Beck, was that 2 years is too long to wait for feedback.
Oh,
we want to measure something more frequently, and I think the more frequently we can get that feedback with our measures, the quicker we can act, the quicker we can make those interventions and help a child.
Absolutely, and that's critical. That's really critical in education, you know. Kids won't learn by osmosis. You know, that's one of the things that I think up until now some people have thought, well, if kids are immersed in literacy and reading experiences, then they'll just pick it up. But lots of kids don't. They need to be explicitly taught the skills, and if they're not being taught the skills as they need, then the measure will actually then find that, and the measures that the school have chosen can actually go down quite deep into the specific skills and say, oh, okay, well, you know, this little chappy over here, he actually needs some more work on this aspect of reading, so we can provide that for him. So the school's done really well with the measures that they've selected.
Did you guys go to the step of having the measure gallery?
They did.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. I went up there and we talked about the next step, which was about the buy-in. The leadership team really took that on board and said, yeah, you know, they really wanted to have that, because previously they'd had their three-year plan, and basically the principal, and he was quite open about this, he was new to the school, and he'd come in and said, right, this is what we're going to do. And I think that was really appropriate at the time. But now, 3 years down the track, he now wanted to make sure that there was that buy-in from the rest of the staff. So we started to set up some visuals in terms of the gallery. So we worked out that we could have the big results map up on the PowerPoint, up on the big screen, and around that we could have the different NAPLAN measures over the last 3 years. So people actually saw the data and actually made the connections as to why this was an important measure to keep track of.
Oh, that's cool. So it wasn't just measure designs and results mapping, results maps that were in the gallery. You actually had the measures with the data.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So that was really positive. Unfortunately, I wasn't it's a 4.5 hour drive from where my office is to this particular school. So
you couldn't just pop in.
I couldn't just pop in on my way home, no. But the principal could not wait. He could not wait. Like they did this in about, I think, week three of last term. And in week five we had Leaders Day and he was so excited. He just couldn't wait to tell me, oh, the girls did a fantastic job. And they presented all this information. They put up all these reasons as to why. And people were engaged. And there were people from central office in Adelaide who worked in the quality improvement and effectiveness unit. And there was a visiting principal from an Adelaide school who was up working as a mentor. And they said, look, this was just one of the most effective staff meetings that we've seen. So they really appreciated and saw value in the process that and the staff had gone through, because the engagement of people in, okay, so what does this mean for me? In my classroom as a year 12 English teacher, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for me as a teacher in a year 11 art lesson or a year 10 science class? What does this mean for me? This aspect of reading comprehension that we're going to have as a priority, how am I going to contribute to that? So it was a really powerful exercise for that staff to go through.
Brilliant. That's great. So did it fuel people enough to want to go and spend more time bringing measures to life? So did you get to the measure definition stage where people are fleshing out how things are calculated, where the data is coming from, and starting to collate the data?
That's certainly where our next step is going to be. So we've just started our term four, and that's going to be my work with the school this term. So just making sure we're really clear about that. We've actually got our results from the NAPLAN, the National Literacy and Numeracy tests that have happened. And so there's some really encouraging information there. So we will actually take that next step when I go up on my next visit. So
tremendous. That's great. Sounds like there'd be a great people, great bunch of people to work with. You mentioned that earlier, but to have that much excitement around something so typically dull as performance measurement's a pretty great achievement.
That was the thing that really, I think, impacted on me, that if people can make that connection, and I really do think one of the most powerful things is that results mapping, because it is so visual, it's just really in your face. And people can see at a glance, hang on, we're trying to do 150 things and we're doing it all at surface level and we're not having the chance to go deep into improvement. And that's a common theme within our education department at the moment. Do something narrow and deep. Go narrow and deep is kind of the phrase that's being bandied around, I guess. And it's so true.
Yeah,
it is so true. You can't measure everything. You just measure what you're wanting to improve. So how do you know what's the most important thing that you need to improve at the moment? And then how does what I do in my classroom as an educator influence that? I think that they're the two critical messages from the PUMP process that I've particularly taken to heart, I guess, from that, and they're the ones that I think schools have really connected to.
It is so important. We have to ruthlessly prioritise. Try saying that fast three times. We have to ruthlessly prioritise.
Yes.
That's the only way we'll really change the world the way we want to, not through a shotgun.
Absolutely.
Shotgun approach.
Yeah. One of the things that the school said to me was that one of the things that they found it a little bit hard was to take things out of their plan, because they felt that if we take it out of the plan, then we're not doing it. And so what I suggested to them was, well, hang on, you know, like you can't improve everything, so work out what you want to improve. It doesn't mean that you're not doing things, like because things can go into a maintenance mode. And so we actually talked about improvement mode and maintenance mode, and then there might be things that you're getting ready to do in a few years' time that you're developing some awareness of. Maybe there's a few people in the school who are working on something ready to bring into the improvement mode in a few years' time. So they actually then felt happy taking all of that stuff out of their results map and putting it into, okay, so what are we developing awareness on, what are we improving, and what are we maintaining? And then they could still see that they were achieving a lot, but this stuff that's in the improvement plan, that's just the stuff we're improving, and that's just the stuff that we're measuring at the moment.
That's a very nifty idea. I love
that. Yeah,
that's
quite good.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where it just kind of like hit me, and I thought, well, they still need, this work is still important to them. They don't want to think it's being forgotten about or it's not being done anymore.
Yeah.
So how can we make sure that we document that? So, and it just came up as a little three-step table. So, yeah.
Lovely. So have you worked with anyone to go beyond the measure gallery into measure definitions and reporting and control?
Yes.
Right, so tell us something about that.
Well, it came about again through this school. We were looking at attendance as one of their areas of improvement. And one of the things that I developed a great liking for from doing the pump course was control charts. And one of the reasons why I really liked it was because it actually allows you to see the normal variability within your measure. For some of our sites, the attendance of children goes up and down like a yo-yo. And so we weren't really sure as to whether things were improving or declining, why they were changing. And so what I did was I worked with one of the teams at the school that I have been referring to, and we looked at a particular group of students, a particular cohort of students, and we looked at plotting their attendance at the school in a control chart form. So then they actually then had some fairly powerful data to be able to say, okay, we're above our mean, you know, this is where we've shown improvement, we can connect it to this particular work that we have been doing since the beginning of the year, or this is within our normal variability, or we know why attendance went down that term because of these particular reasons. So it actually gave them some control, I guess, using a control chart, it gave them control over knowing what their data was telling them. From that, I then thought, gee, this would be really great to do for the region. So what I've done is I've developed control charts for our attendance for preschool and school students, for all of our students and for our Aboriginal students. And so we're now actually able to see how attendance is travelling in our region and some of the initiatives that have been undertaken in our region, how they're contributing or how they're affecting the attendance flow. And again, that then gives us control over, okay, well, this is normal variability, or this is a signal that's telling us, hang on, you know, we've actually been above our mean for the last three or four terms. This is actually a really good sign that what we've implemented is actually contributing to that improved attendance. So that's how we've taken that particular measure and developed it further for our region. So
that's tremendous. I guess that's your view for with the area school as well, for taking them through to that kind of position too with their measures.
Absolutely. Yes, that's exactly right. So because it's very challenging when attendance jumps around a little bit from term to term, and somebody comes and says, well, how come your attendance is worse this term than it was last term? You know, what have you done? Then it actually gives power to the school or to the team to say, well, we actually really understand what this measure is telling us, and so it's telling us that for specific community or family reasons, that's why the attendance went down, and we can see the trend that, you know, in all the different year levels, that's what happened. Or it could be that, well, you know, we implemented this particular initiative, this attendance campaign, and so we can actually see the rise at that particular point in time where we did that, and how now our attendance has maintained to be at the mean or above for the last few terms. So it actually does give them that power to be able to communicate that to, I guess, people in higher level positions who are asking those sorts of questions.
Yeah, so they're not chasing their tail, they're not trying to explain every little point of variation.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's great. So you have, as you've been telling us about your progress in these different areas, Beck, what some of the big impacts have been. But maybe I could get you to just quickly summarise, because you've worked with a few different groups of people. What, again, in summary, would be the biggest impacts that POMP's made so far?
I think it goes back to those two things. I think the connection of individuals' work to the bigger plan, I think that's a really big impact, and that certainly is best done through that results mapping, that visual process.
Yeah.
That's one of the big impacts. And secondly, would have to be, I think the control charts in terms of actually really making that connection between what they're seeing and understanding what it is that they're seeing. They're able to interpret the changes within their data and actually feel confident about what it is that they're seeing or what they're reading into the data. I think those are two things that have really come out from this, and I think just this little ripple effect, you know, like I did this results map with the regional support services, and that sort of there was a few other people there, regional director was there who observed it happening, and so then she was aware of what we'd done, and then I'd done it with the school, and our regional leadership consultant was there, who was really impressed with the process. So there's this little ripple effect that just is starting to happen, and I'm sure it's the same in all organisations, but certainly in education, there's that word of mouth input from people. And so if one site has actually found something to be of benefit, then they'll share that with other leaders in other sites, and so then the information or the request will then come back through that word of mouth way. So just knowing that's starting to ripple out there is good, because it means that we're on the right track. It means that the decision that I took to go and seek out more knowledge and a process that I could use and apply to our region was the right thing for me to do and was the right thing for our region at the time.
That's tremendous.
Mm.
So given that it has been a good experience for you, is there still anything that you'd do differently based on what you've learned and what you've done so far as you do more and more POMP implementations, Beck? Would you take a different approach in any way?
I would really like, I know this sounds a bit strange, but I'd really like to take a school or a team right through the whole process, because what I've done is I've taken teams or schools through to a certain step, or I've picked it up from this step and taken it to that step.
Yeah.
So I'd actually really like to go through the whole process of step 1 through to 8 with one particular team or one particular school. But just in terms of me trialling it, it hasn't quite worked out that way. And that's fine, because I figure that, you know, it's better to jump in and have a go and get it 70% right, and then the next time you step in and have a go, you get it 80% right and 90% right and so on.
I so agree with what you just said, Beth. You know, if you'd waited for the perfect opportunity, look at all the things that people would have missed out on in the meantime.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, even just things like in the step 8 in terms of formalising the reporting process, what I'm doing for our regional self-review is using the template that you've put together to actually report on our improvement work. And so now that's starting to then flow out into other aspects or other parts of the region in terms of, well, we can report this way within an improvement team, or the regional leadership consultant might take that and share that with other consultants in other regions to say, well, this is what we're doing. And so just, as I said, it's just this ripple effect. I'm just sort of throwing little bits in where they seem to fit, And so I guess that word is getting out there, that there is this process that's happening. But it would just be great to take one team or one school through the whole process in one hit.
Maybe that ripple effect will deliver that back to you, that opportunity.
That's
many
what I'm
times
hoping.
Over.
That's what I'm hoping.
This has been great, Beck. Thank you so much for sharing all of your experiences and your learnings, your insights, your tips, etc. I'm wondering, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to share with other pump users or potential pump users for that matter? Any words of wisdom from your own experiences?
I don't know about words of wisdom, but certainly absolutely have a go. I certainly found the support that you provided in terms of me emailing when I got stuck with an issue or something like that. That was really, really valuable because it allowed me to sort of get back on track again or feel confident in what I was saying to the region or to a particular school. So to have that support behind me was really great. I certainly found doing the online course was good, but because I needed to have it in a different way, the face-to-face was better. And that's just because of, I think, that connection and relationship that you then develop with people. That was really supportive. Just get in there and have a go. And as I said, even if you're trying little bits of it in different arenas, that's okay because, you know, collectively you can actually see, step one and two work here and step three and four work over there and step five and six work there and step seven and eight work there. So ultimately, you know, the whole process is actually going to work and flow. I came from a background, as I said, I'm an educator and I certainly don't have any stats or data background whatsoever, you know. Up until I did this, it was all smoke and mirrors and hoping people didn't really find out that I didn't know what I was doing. And that's really, really honest. But to find a process that works, you know, and to actually utilise that is great. So certainly would encourage people to just jump in and give it a go. People have said to me that, look, you know, when you explain it like that, it's so simple. And it goes back to things like, okay, so what results do you want from your work? And when people sort of get into the high theoretical language and you sort of pull them back and say, so what does that actually mean? You know, so what result do you want from that? And it actually just brings them back to, okay, grassroots level. And that's what it's about, really.
Perfect spot to end. That's just great. I so agree with that, Beck. I think bringing it back to grassroots level, making it work, making the right things work well is what it's all about. We don't need to have things as complex as we tend to make them.
No, absolutely. It's that whole KISS principle, isn't it? Keep it simple.
Very much so.
Why overcomplicate things?
Beck, thank you so much for your time. I so appreciate you sharing this time to share your experience, not just with me, obviously, but with everybody else who's listening to this. So I hope those of you who are listening to this have taken some inspiration from Beck's progress and picked up a few tips and are feeling like you can go back and either boost your pump implementation a little bit better or start one. All right, that's great. Thanks again, Beck, for joining us. Best
You're
of luck
welcome.
As you continue with your pump implementation in education.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity to share. I've really appreciated that. And I just really believe that you can learn anything, you know, and the pump process is just a really, really streamlined way to apply that set of new knowledge. So certainly would encourage people to give it a go. So thanks for your support too, Stacey, and thanks for inviting me to share today.
That's a pleasure. Always a pleasure with you, Beck. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
What I really love about Beck's approach is that she's not forcing performance measurement onto anybody. She's taking the opportunities that come up and using them to introduce people to better goal setting and better performance measurement practices. Because she's doing that in such a visual and engaging way, she's truly managing to shift people's understanding of how to focus on what matters most and how to make a real difference through what they measure. success in performance measurement starts this way, taking small steps and building buy-in along the way until you reach a tipping point where it's time to take a more proactive and planned approach to organizational performance measurement. But if you do that too soon, without enough buy-in and enough small wins first, the danger is that you'll waste a load of energy and expense on a measurement system that no one feels real, authentic ownership for. Well, that is it for today's podcast. Remember, you can download these podcasts and also a ton of practical articles at measureupblog.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast at iTunes. Just search for Measure Up. And if you're a regular listener, I would love for you to give the show a ranking and comment at iTunes. Until next time, this is Stacey Barr, the Performance Measure Specialist, signing off. Keep measuring what matters and engaging everyone you can to do the same.